I want you to tell us everything there is to know about the Kalispell Trail. So much is happening right now.
Yeah, so it's definitely exciting. And we talk about this so many times when we're here together, but to see it underway and, you know, majority of the rail is up and gone and they're already grading some of that core line area, some of the park line, basically the foundation for what's going to be that parkland trail. And, contractors ahead of schedule, they've jumped right in and gotten things moving. And obviously people can see a lot of work going on up at Depot Park where they're preparing that plaza area. So definitely an exciting period after a significant amount of time and energy and work.
What would you say? Maybe of 20 years?
Decades?
I think you've got that long, maybe even longer of, you know, the vision mm-hmm. and the dream.
Yeah.
And then probably about, you know, 12 years of some of those first decisions being taken that put things into, motion. And then maybe 10, 11 years of some of the community discussions really starting to take place. And then, 8, 9 years of really just constant intentional work on it to get to where we are today.
And those little details that you spent so much time on yourself, just negotiating all the deals with the railroad, just to get that done.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting in terms of, this is a project of the magnitude that you just typically don't see. When you start talking about, that length of a right-of-way through the community and being able to get the acquisition of that and work with partners such as the railroad and be able just to have that opportunity, you typically just don't see. And really the impact it's going to have on really how it changes the dynamics within, transportation, within just community in the downtown area.
Yeah, but it's just a trail.
Yeah. But it will definitely breathe some, livelihood and activity into the areas where you want it the most.
Oh, sure.
And you want people out and on that trail and engaging, and you want them taking their dogs for walks down there and really just being part of a community in that core center of town. It's just really exciting. I'm very, very eager to see this summer progress.
And I'm seeing piles of tracks mm-hmm. laying around. I'm thinking, boy, there ought to be some recycling going around here.
So there is a significant amount of track, and actually part of it was within the bid, and they're able to actually probably lower the actual construction cost. But we are also keeping a significant amount, and we'll determine later, what we're going to do with it in terms of, do we cut it into pieces and, put it up for sale or commemorative pieces.
Oh, sure.
So all that's yet to be determined, but yeah. we are keeping a significant amount. But I think actually a lot of it will be reused.
We have railroad ties as part of our landscaping work where we live.
Not an unusual component. Like I say, the contractor has all that stuff within the bid and whatever they're able to recycle, reuse. Mm-hmm. It just actually ends up benefiting the bid that we got.
Yeah, the track is in pretty good shape.
And that's the good thing about, a lot of the track is it's rated, for a good use, and they're able to reuse it within the system throughout the country. Mm-hmm. The stuff we're keeping obviously is the older aspect that may
sure.
not be stamped and rated, but it's still a good track. Mm-hmm. The reality is we wanted to make sure we keep enough of it for reuse if we didn't want to do commemorative pieces or something of that nature.
Well, don't we have plans for a commemorative a locomotive somewhere along the track?
Well, locomotive is there, and
it's there now.
Yeah, it's off of 4th. So if you drive
4th Avenue East?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, look to the east from there, you'll see the locomotive there. And it'll be kind of worked in, it's going to stay on its rail and, mm-hmm. and be present in there. So, and it's actually in its final location. But people will see it when they're actually able to access it through mm-hmm. the trail.
Wow.
Now, you mentioned the right-of-way and the railroad company. Is it BNSF?
Who? Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering who it was, because it goes back 100 years or so. I don't know. The right-of-way gets passed on to the current railroad, I guess.
Yeah, well, so we acquired the rights to the right of way, essentially. Okay. You know, what under the rail banking agreement, that's why, you know, it's a, you know, a long, difficult project. It's all governed, you know, under the Surface Transportation Board at the federal level. So for interstate commerce and travel
just
with the rail.
Just unraveling all that stuff has got to have been crazy.
So we, you know, we approached, you know, BN and started having those discussions. First, you know, they had to essentially petition to abandon it, which put it into a, you know, public comment period. And that's when we put in the application for an interim use. And that was approved by the Surface Transportation Board. And that gave us the ability to negotiate with BNSF to really acquire the rights to that right of way, which, you know, under the rail banking component, in theory, if they were ever to decide that they needed, you know, that rail again to service, they could reacquire it. Don't think it's ever happened. Don't anticipate it occurring. But what that does is it allows us to then step in as an interim use and use it for that core area trail. But that's why you won't see any permanent structures built on top of where that rail used to be, because in theory, they could come back and acquire it. And, you know, and part of that is because it's so difficult to get linear right of way and the rights and the acquisition. And, you know, they always point to, well, if there's any type of, you know, military conflict where you need additional transportation routes, you know, that's just one reason why it could potentially be used again later for rail.
Oh my gosh. So who owns that property?
So we have essentially fee title to it, but it's still under the governance of the Surface Transportation Board.
So it's like an easement.
Yeah, we gave away the right of way for that, but we own the property.
So yeah, we own the right of way. Mm-hmm. But the property is still owned by whomever it was acquired from way back then. Mm-hmm. You assume, you know, Burlington Northern paid the going market rate at that time for the property for the right of way. Mm-hmm. We essentially acquired the right of way. But under that agreement with the and Surface Transportation Board, that they could reacquire it.
Yeah. See, these are the little details that a city manager has to deal with.
And was that kind of like following a trail, rabbit holes? Because did you just have this knowledge already, or did you have to track down each step of the way?
Yeah, when you start into a project, you end up learning a lot.
I guess.
And developing, you know, you have a general idea of how land use works. But, you know, 15 years ago, I understood the general idea of rail banking, but not all the specific details of what goes into it and, you know, any of the different legal parameters. So you end up learning as the process goes on.
Doug Russell is our guest. He's our Kalispell city manager. And I kind of want to understand the dynamics of city government and city council. And we'll kind of dive into that right after this. Our guest is our city manager, Doug Russell. And one of the things I wanted to kind of talk with you a little bit about is the modern dynamics of the manager council form of government. A lot of folks are curious about how that works. We think about the old council manager or mayor council form where the mayor and the council kind of run the show. Well, city management has become so complex these days that it's pretty hard for citizen council members and a citizen mayor to be able to understand all the dynamics. And so we've come up with a city manager who is a professional and city staff who are professionals run by a governing body. Help us understand how that works together.
Well, you kind of laid the foundation very well in terms of why a lot of communities have gone to the council manager form. And Kalispell did that back in, I can't remember, 1988, somewhere in that time frame. Voted to have a council manager form of government where the manager is in charge of all the day-to-day administrative activities, and then you have the city council and mayor are the legislative body, is essentially how the process works. Now, obviously, there's a very close relationship in how that occurs, and really a lot of it is structured around the budget, you know, which I always refer to as the largest policy document of the governing body, and that really establishes service levels for the community, you know, our upcoming goals and expectations, and that's what the council spends a lot of time on, every year in implementing and putting that into place. So once we get that, then it's the city manager's charge to implement that and then manage those day-to-day activities, work with the department heads to establish, you know, all the other, you know, goals and efforts within the city and work to get those in effort. Then we get different policy perspectives that come up. You know, obviously those get pushed up to the governing body and, you know, we'll provide recommendations on, you know, the alternatives and what, mm-hmm. you know, we think is the best approach and then leave it in their hands.
You've got this quagmire of federal regulations, EPA regulations, you've got state regulations, you've got DNRC, all of this quagmire is stuff that's telling you what you have to do. And most of us have no idea what that is.
Very true. You know, that's why we have, and really that's, you talk about all those different regulations and where they go. So what we do from a staffing standpoint and, you know, just taking that circumstance and kind of unpacking it is, you know, we develop in our public works department, for example, take all those regulations and what they mean and really identify the impact that's going to have on us into the future. And we create facility plans, which is essentially, you know, a plan for like our water treatment or our water distribution or sewer distribution, collection and treatment, and put each of those utilities into a facility plan saying this is what we're going to have to do into the future, either for meeting guidelines that are expected or for just the natural, you know, upgrade of equipment, you know, the distribution system, being able to put all those things, basically capital improvements into the future. It takes all those things into account and bring that forward by the governing body, who basically adopts that with whatever, you know, changes or recommendations.
Now, the governing body is the city council.
Correct.
And mayor.
Yes, yes.
Okay, they are the ones who are make things official.
Yep.
But the city manager and the city staff are the ones that do all the heavy lifting.
Well, and just to be able to have the amount of time and past knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So. So, yeah, they'll take that final action to put those things in place, and then that gets implemented then into the budget.
How did you figure out how to do all this stuff? What kind of background did you have to bring to this job?
So I actually graduated from Bozeman, Montana State, with a bachelor's degree in psychology.
And, that's a good one.
Getting things done. Now I get it.
Then moved down to Denver and worked in various positions within that field for a few years. And then started working for the city and county of Denver in their environmental health department and was immediately amazed at, I mean, in Denver, 10,000 employees, you know, within the city and how we different divisions and departments work together. You know, I was in the environmental health department doing a lot of health inspections, but yet I would get called on by the police department to go enforce different things within you know, peddling and food safety that they actually couldn't. And it was just unique how, you know, the authority in that regulation fell on the health department then for that governance that they'd actually, we'd have to work together to be able to enforce some things. So at that point, I became very interested in organizational dynamics and, you know, efficiency and effectiveness. And so went back to school for a master's degree in public administration, really with the aid of the city and county of Denver, and was able to obviously get that degree and then move on into city management.
Did you go to University of Denver?
University of Colorado.
Oh, you went to
at
Boulder?
The Denver campus.
Ah, okay.
Yep, so, yep, great MBA program and, you know, definitely be able to, and actually at the downtown campus is just, you know, bringing back the memories of, you know, going in, and it was probably about three blocks from where I was working in downtown Denver. So it was just very convenient at that opportunity to be able to do it.
Well, the one thing people should understand about the city and county of Denver is it's all in the same building.
Yes.
And so you've got a sheriff and a police chief in the same building. You've got, you only have a mayor. You don't have, but you've got a council.
Very large council.
Yeah. And it's a really, it's a, I've never seen quite that kind of a government before.
Yeah, to have a consolidated government with that structure and how they occurred things. And again, you end up with, you know, appointees by the, you know, whoever the mayor was at that time. And usually you'd see all those appointees change with each election. Mm-hmm. But then right below them, you'd have the department directors that were the ones that you know, stayed on and mm-hmm. and really developed those things and able to stay out of some of the political discussions, yeah. which is where the department appointees would end up being in place.
So, very, very fascinating form of government. So you got a real, yeah, real taste of it.
It truly was. And yeah. I really am appreciative of my time working for the city and county of Denver and being able to experience that because, you know, I saw, you know, multiple different departmental appointees, you know, mm-hmm. even throughout my time there. And in fact, you know, the individual that I reported to initially in my position is now actually one of the appointees by the mayor's office. So it's risen up there and we stay in yeah. contact. And, you know, just to see those different dynamics has definitely aided me in my career.
Mm. Oh. Okay, so now we kind of understand how all that works. I was curious because we used to call them councilmen. Then, mm-hmm. of course, that kind of was not politically correct anymore, council members. Now they refer to themselves as counselors.
Any variety of
Is there a special meaning for that?
You know, they are elected officials of the community they serve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a multitude of ways. Council member, council person, mm-hmm. counselor. It all works.
Okay. I thought perhaps being a counselor, they were counseling the city staff. And I think, and some people thought, oh, that's a little weird. I want them to be more than just a counseling the staff.
Yeah, definitely provide that overall guidance and direction mm-hmm. for the community. And then we work to implement that. Mm-hmm. And like I say, it's one of those areas that, you know, you see some of the things that we're talking about right now that really is establishing, you know, where we're going to be at in 20 years, be it the core area trail, you know, be it some of the matters around housing, you know, a huge discussion last year at this time, actually had already been made at this time, on the, you know, water and sewer rates and impact fees. And, you know, the decision they made there is just one of those variables that, you know, has led to, you know, the amount of housing we have going up right now. You know, the multifamily units is really what those decisions were based around. And it's easy to sit back and look at the number of units we have under construction right now, which I think everyone would agree is desperately needed. But because they were able to have that foresight 12 to 18 months ago to make some of those policy decisions, you know, we're in a situation where other communities are trying to play catch up, and we're looking to put these online now because of that decision and the vision the governing body had. So it's a pretty big seat that they fill.
Marijuana. That's been a pretty controversial thing, and Robin's going to ask how we're going to handle that here in Kalispell right after this.
Well, a lot of technical stuff we went through. It's enough to drive you to drugs, I'll tell you. And fortunately, we have recreational marijuana on the horizon, but I guess that probably poses a lot of challenges and need to orchestrate things. Now, I understand initially only the medical providers can be commercial providers. Is that right?
You may be correct in that. You know, that's not something that we have to worry about from the city standpoint because they're handling all that at the state level. But I think that might be correct in that first year, maybe it's the mm-hmm. transition from medical. But I'm not positive on that.
Now, one of the things, recreational marijuana. That being passed, is that going to open up the state also to hemp being used for other things, making clothing and all that kind of stuff that has always been talked about?
You know, I think it'll probably facilitate that because you'll, you know, I don't know how and yeah. what the byproducts are of growing any type of, you know, medical or recreational marijuana, yeah, but I'm yeah. assuming that's part of the
byproduct. Well, it's all hemp, and, you know, yeah. and hemp has been. In fact, I read somewhere that one of the reasons for the marijuana law and it being lumped into Schedule 1 or whatever it was way back when was cotton producers thought they were going to get competition from hemp for clothing and that kind of a thing. So who knows, you know, when you get an institutional thing going on. Now, how is the city going to be affected by this opening up?
So we are going to have a work session on it in a couple weeks. And really what we're looking at and what we're charged with is how do you incorporate something that, for example, right now, there's no medical marijuana distribution in the city of Kalispell. we have a provision in our zoning law that anything that is a violation of federal law is against our zoning code.
Oh.
That's why, you know, even any of the medical marijuana is, you all see outside of the city limits of Kalispell. The new legislation does not allow that to occur. So we have to figure out how are they going to be zoned, those facilities.
Oh,
so
boy.
That is where a lot of the discussion will emerge in that Monday work session is, you know, do we want to incorporate some of the same things we've done with casinos and putting different conditions on the zoning? You know, do we want to keep, you know, a certain distance from our parks, for example?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could be in, you know, these zones that allow for retail business, but maybe 30 feet from every park.
Yeah.
You know, as a possibility. And we start looking at the park line, which is in a business zone. You know, do we want it lined with, you know, retail distribution establishments? That's part of the discussion that we'll have at the council level to identify, you know, some of that zoning and hopefully to do it fairly soon. That way, people can start making decisions. You know, definitely there's going to be a demand. And so you're going to have people looking to acquire property and build facilities in anticipation of that. So, you know, the earlier we can jump out ahead, the better direction.
January 1st, 2022, I guess, is the official
date. Well, how do we get around that, the federal aspect of this?
It is what it is. You know, the reality is, they've passed it at the state level now, based on the initiative. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, there's language in there that would be in violation of state law. Obviously, federal law has come out and identified they're not going to enforce that.
Okay.
And it is, you know, whether or not we actually maybe just repeal that language within our zoning code is likely what would occur. But I think if we relied upon that as a prohibition, I'm pretty sure the city of Kalispell would be sued and would probably be at risk of losing lawsuit. So, you know, it's best just to jump out in front of it and say, okay, you know, are there different zoning provisions we want to put in place as this licensing, you know, provision is coming from the state?
When you say that federal is not going to prosecute or do anything about it. We heard that before with medical marijuana, and then suddenly there's these federal task force busting people. So I don't know if you need a certificate or something that says you will not be prosecuted, or, you know, it's just so crazy.
Yeah, you know, there's obviously numerous states right now that have legalized recreational use, but they still fall under federal law.
And they have finally created legislation, including our senators voted for legislation that brought them into the banking system so they don't have to be an all-cash business anymore.
Yeah, which is a unique aspect. And, you know, I've heard stories of, you know, basically, you know, truckloads coming in to City Hall from some of these states that allow it so they can pay their excise tax, but they can't do it electronically.
Yeah.
So they have to bring in cash
to
City Hall, and, you know, then you have to find a secure place at City Hall for the storage of that and the whole
You know, the all cash businesses used to be the mafia and the jukebox roots. You know, this it's a good thing that they're dealing with the banking part of it. So you have that county.
Oh, very, very relevant statement, because you hear about that in, you know, Colorado was one of the first ones to go. And, you know, you hear about who's actually running those businesses, and maybe it's those enterprises that benefit from a cash only business because it is harder to track. And you hear that, you know, there is different money behind each of those different businesses that are actually leading to, you know, higher level of, you know, activity.
Right.
And again, I'm speculating here, not accusing anyone of anything.
Right. But nonetheless, though, that they brought that into the banking system. So that's an indication that things are moving more in terms of legal. So what you're saying is that we probably will have to change our zoning to allow medical marijuana.
I think if we want to stay out of lawsuits at the city of Kalispell, we'll have to provide an ability. And, you know, the state law talks about we can't enact any regulation that is overly burdensome to anyone that wants to provide that. So, you know, we'll look at that zoning, and, you know, we put in efforts within casino zonings a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just, you know, all throughout. And like I said, that's the discussion we'll have at the work session in terms of how we want to go about that.
This is going to be exciting. Gosh, like we usually do, we run out of time here. Doug, as always, thanks, a great Doug. Discussion. Thanks so much.
Yeah, great. Happy to be in.
Our city manager, Doug Russell.